Word meanings. Sudrichinaha.
Sudrichinaha.
Just appropriate.
Just appropriate.
He.
He.
Certainly.
Certainly.
I am.
This.
Loke.
In the world.
Pantaha.
Path.
Shimaha.
Auspicious.
Okuta bhayaha.
Without fear.
Sushilaha.
Sushila.
Well behaved.
Sadavaha.
Saintly persons. Dhyatra.
Wherein.
Narayana parayanaha.
Those who have taken the path of Narayana.
Devotional service.
As their life and soul.
So the last verse is talking about serving the Mahatmas, Mahatsevam. So now this verse doesn't seem to be continuing on that topic, but it actually is. So it begins, the path followed by pure devotees, because we were just talking about pure devotees in the last verse. The path followed by pure devotees who are well behaved and fully endowed with the best qualifications is certainly the most auspicious path in this world. It is free from fear and it is authorized by the Shastras. So you can repeat. The path followed by pure devotees
who are well behaved
and fully endowed with the best qualifications.
It's
certainly the most auspicious path in this material world.
It is free from fear
and authorized by the Shastras. So the last verse is saying, serve the Mahatmas, that's better than atonement. And then this verse is saying, where the Mahatmas go, where the pure devotees go, that's the best path. So you should follow that path. Just like in the Ava, the Avanti Brahman said, I will become Krishna conscious. He made that statement. If anyone says, I will be Krishna conscious, we'll think, oh, he's puffed up. Right? Wouldn't you? Generally. In fact, there is one devotee. He had left our movement and become very prominent in another movement. And it was known to be extremely learned and extremely popular in that movement. And one of our godbrothers met him who knew him as a bhakta in England. And the devotee told him, he said, I will never fall down. So that seems to be authorized because that's what the Avanti Brahman said. He said, Aho tarishyami duranta tamo. I will cross over the ocean of material existence. Unfortunately, this devotee fell down. Because generally, if someone says, I'll never fall down, you could assume there's something wrong. But this devotee, this Avanti Brahman, he said, this is the reason I won't fall down, because I followed the path chalked out by the other acharyas. And they traverse that path, and I'm on that path, I'm going to follow it, and if I follow what they do, then I'm good. So there's no pride there. So this verse is saying something similar. You know, you're asked to follow the Mahatmas, why? Because they know where they're going, you follow them, and you have nothing to fear because they've already gone there. And if you go there, then you go where they went, you follow that path, everything's good. And it's authorized by the Shastra, which means it's not whimsical. Of course, anything authorized by the Shastra means it's not concocted. It's not whimsical. So the purport. One should not think that the person who takes to bhakti is one who cannot perform the ritualistic ceremonies recommended in the Karmakanda section of the Vedas, or is not sufficiently educated to speculate on spiritual subjects. In other words, we've been talking about Karmakanda, Jnanakanda. So now Prabhupada's making the point that some people think, oh, if you take to bhakti, that means you don't know how to do ritual and you don't know how to think. So you take to bhakti because you're kind of useless for anything else. That's the argument. Mayavadis generally allege that the bhakti path is for women and illiterates. How does that make you feel, ladies? Hey, you know, if you have to become a woman or a literate to take to bhakti, then, you know, that's better than being a Mayavadi. This is a groundless accusation. The bhakti path is followed by the most learned scholars, such as the Goswamis, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Ramanujacharya. These are the actual followers of the bhakti path. Regardless of whether or not one is educated or aristocratic, one must follow in their footsteps. Mahajano Jena Gatasapanta. One must follow the path of the Mahajans. The Mahajanas are those who have taken to the path of devotional service. Sushila Sadhavo Yatra Narayana Parayana. For these great personalities are the perfect persons, as stated in the Bhagavatam. So again, the same thing is saying. These are the great devotees. They've taken to bhakti. Just follow that path and you'll become perfect. And you can be like the Devanti Brahman saying, I will cross over the ocean of material existence. Why? Because they've left the boat. I'm just taking the boat they've taken. So that's not pride. That's just stating the fact. These great personalities are the perfect persons, as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam. It's asti bhaktir bhagavat akinchana. Sarvagunas tatta samasade suraha. One who has unflinching devotion to the personality of Godhead has all the good qualities of the demigods. The less intelligent, however, misunderstand the bhakti path and therefore allege that it is for one who cannot execute ritualistic ceremonies or speculate. As confirmed here by the word sadrichinaha, bhakti is the path that is appropriate, not the paths of karmakanda and jnanakanda. Mayavadis may be Sushila Shadava, well-behaved saintly persons. But there is nevertheless some doubt about whether they are actually making progress, for they have not accepted the path of bhakti. On the other hand, those who follow the path of the Acharyas are Sushila and Shadava. But furthermore, their path is akuta bhaya, which means free from fear. One should fearlessly follow the 12 Mahajans and their line of disciplic succession and thus be liberated from the clutches of maya. So I read a very nice story. Maybe Brahmananda Prabhu just came out with his new book that I was fortunate to get in Vrindavan, and he also talked about it, and I'd also was listening to some of the early pastimes that he described to Prabhupada. And one incident I think that many of us know is that in the early 70s, There was some propaganda being made against our movement by some of Prabhupada's godbrothers, and he was quite concerned. And there were signs turning up that some of the devotees were disrespecting Prabhupada. And actually, Prabhupada left Los Angeles and went back to India. And one of the reasons is that he felt that he was being offended, and he wanted to actually be away from the devotees. So it was something that Prabhupada took very seriously. And Brahmananda, in his desire, or in his fear that we have offended Prabhupada so severely that Prabhupada is going to leave us. That's what he thought. And many devotees were thinking. Because the Prabhupada was quite upset. ISKCON founder Acharya was not appearing on his books. Things of this nature being minimized. Some disciples were going, who were initiated, were wanting to take initiation from other Gaudiya Math gurus. Many things were going on. And Brahmananda and several others thought that actually Prabhupada was going to leave ISKCON because we had offended him. And somehow or other, which is not clear to me, I don't know if it's clear to anybody why he was thinking this way, but he began thinking that we've made this huge offense to Srila Prabhupada and that Prabhupada is actually God. And we've offended him, and we've not treated him as God. That was his realization. Somehow or other, everything that was happening, he came to that conclusion. That Prabhupada's upset of being disrespected meant that Prabhupada's actually God. And so, 1970, what happened in 1970? So the movement, 1970, your average devotee was probably like a year in the movement. And nobody read the Bhagavatam at that time. So we had Bhagavad Gita. We didn't know that much. So there was a festival in New Vrindavan. And at this festival, Brahmananda, who was then a sannyasi, and some other newly made sannyasis, were preaching the same thing. They were, sannyasis in ISKCON in 1970 were quite rare and extremely powerful. You were there, Sureshwara? So it was Brahmananda, Vishnujanaswami, Gargamuni, and who else? One of? Shubal. So if anything's not correct, you can correct me because you were there. But, yes?
You were saying you weren't sure why he was saying Prabhupada was God. Brahmananda Prabhu explains on following Srila Prabhupada DVD series.
Yes.
Yadavars. So he said he said, especially myself, I was becoming very envious of Srila Prabhupada because I was getting this compromised view of him from India, And so he explains that it was a psychological flip-flop. I had been minimizing him, so to overcompensate for that offense, I began to say he was God. Yeah. And then that's exactly what Prabhupada said later. He said, Prabhupada said, the only thing worse than underestimating the guru is to overestimate him and make him God. Because if he can be God, you can be God too. Yeah. This is Mayavad, and that's why Prabhupada acted so swiftly and suddenly and expelled them. Because the GBC said, what should we do? It was chaos. The whole festival was, and then so what did the GBC say? They telegram Prabhupada, what should we do? And Prabhupada sent a telegram back. Expel them immediately. Continue, please.
Yes. So they were expelled. They ended up in Detroit. They were locked in a room. And then they were let out the next day and they just walked and they had no money. Prabhupada said, just go out and preach. Of course, Prabhupada corrected this philosophy, as Sureshwar said, rightly said, and Prabhupada said, yes. If I am God, you can be God also. Then, of course, that would be the end of ISKCON. But anyway, it was obviously a confusing time. But Brahmananda, through his preaching and Prabhupada's rectification, he realized the mistake he made, but he says something very significant. And he said that when this happened, he felt Prabhupada's mercy withdrawn. That he no longer had the mercy, and basically felt like he had been orphaned and like a ship without a rudder and had no spiritual life. Yes?
He said, I was terrified. I was consumed by terror that I could feel Prabhupada would draw his mercy from me, and I was terrified.
You could imagine how terrifying that would be. Yes? So, this verse is describing the path of these pure devotees, Mahatsevam, and how every one of us is a product of their mercy because we're following that path. And if we in any way deviate and that mercy is removed, we have no ability, absolutely no ability, to deal with the material energy or become Krishna conscious. Conversely, Prabhupada said so many times, if you take to this path, Maya will not touch you. Like you're guaranteed. Like we are all living testimony of the guarantee that when you have the mercy of a pure devotee and you follow their instruction, you get the mercy, then there's no limit to how Krishna conscious we can be. Otherwise, none of us could be here. None of us could stay. So, it's nice to pray to Prabhupada and all the acharyas, please never withdraw your mercy. If you withdraw it, I'm finished. Completely. My knowledge, my determination, whatever it is, it's useless. And that was also the point made in yesterday's verse. It listed all these good qualities. And previous verses, you can be brahmachari, you can be austere, so many good qualities. But without the kripa of these pure devotees, what's the point? It won't help you. There's a nice story. Shudhakirti was very inspired when he was in Los Angeles because at the time in the early 70s, Los Angeles was like the center of the movement and everything was expanding from there, and book distribution was just expanding more than anywhere in the movement. It was very exciting, and Los Angeles was a big temple. And it was something, you know, book distribution was expanding, but it was new. It was like every day it got bigger, it was new, it never happened before. So he was getting very inspired by seeing all the Sankirtan devotees, because when they would come back, they'd have these huge smiles on their faces. And he could see the energy, and he just, it's very, very purifying. And he just got inspired, he wanted to go out, and he said, and he was Prabhupada's personal servant, he said, Prabhupada, I'm so inspired, can I go out on book distribution? Prabhupada said, yes, but without my mercy. So what did Prabhupada mean? He said, you're my personal servant. You can't just leave and, you know, this is your service. So normally we would say, you know, through book distribution you get so much mercy, which is true. But here we have a situation in which the mercy would be unplugged even though you would be going out on book distribution. There's a similar story I may have told before of a sannyasi who decided to do Ganga Parikrama, to the whole, I don't know, it took like a year, do the whole Ganga Parikrama, all the way up to the Himalayas. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta asked him not to do it. But he was inspired and he did it anyway. And when he returned, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, very displeased, and he took away his sannyas for disobeying him. So, the mercy is there by following the order, following the path. Now, something that's very interesting, you may not know about, but something I have experience of. And Prabhupada, as we know, sometimes described his disciples as being over-intelligent. And by that he meant they're so intelligent they could figure out how to not follow his instructions. So, early in the movement, our schedule was that we would go on Harinam Sankirtan all day, and then we would go back and we'd go again out at night. And it was common to stay out till 11 or 12 o'clock at night, and on the weekdays to stay out till 1 or 1:30. The night before I was initiated, we went on Harinam Sankirtan in Los Angeles to Hollywood, and I particularly remember going to bed at 2 a.m., waking up at 8, taking bath, putting on, getting dressed, and going into the temple for my initiation. We didn't think anything of it. That was common. But at this time, when we're discussing, when this influence came, that they started minimizing Prabhupada and then overreacting, saying that he was God, Prabhupada said, okay, now stop and follow this schedule, this morning schedule. So then, before that, we weren't going to Mangalarti. And then he said, you follow this schedule exactly as I've given, and you don't go out at night anymore. And Maya will not enter. So our program was, we'd come back the evening, we wouldn't go out at night. So I remember particularly, it's like, how could you remember something? It happened 44 years ago, and I remember. I was in Vancouver, I was the temple president, and an Indian man invited us to his home in the evening, and I said, we can't go, because my spiritual master said, we can't go out at night. And you're looking at me thinking, Mahatma is this fanatic, a 19-year-old, 20-year-old, temple president, fanatic. This nice Indian man is inviting you. And the Indian man kept saying, what's the problem? You come. I said, no, no, our spiritual master said, you can't. We can't go out at night. It's forbidden. He was getting exasperated with me and completely frustrated. But we didn't go. He says, no, I can't go. So, as I reflect on those days, my realization is, I wasn't intelligent enough to disobey Prabhupada's instruction. We didn't know enough about Krishna consciousness to be smart enough to figure out how not to follow Prabhupada's instructions. It was only later that we became very learned that we figured out how to kind of, you know, not follow. So how is it that such young devotees were so successful in preaching Krishna consciousness? Because we couldn't figure out how not to follow. So we understood our precarious position. We knew we could fall at any moment. Yes, Sureshwar? We knew. We were like, right, you know, 6 months ago, we were doing things which we can't mention here in class. But so we knew our position was quite precarious. So we weren't going to mess around in compromising. So we were, yes, a little fanatical, but it was what actually gave us our strength, because we knew we had to perfectly follow that path. Then the other thing that was so interesting, if you look at those days, is that there was a dilemma, a dichotomy between how the devotees were acting and their level of Krishna consciousness. Because their level of Krishna consciousness was basically bhajana kriya, not very high. But the level of action was tremendous, tremendously surrendered. Yes? Tremendously surrendered. Just incredible. Just get in a van and go out with a box of peanuts and raisins. Seriously. And that's all you eat, three meals a day. And 12 hours a day, you're on the street distributing books. How can you do that? It's a manifestation of extreme devotion. Devotion that internally, in a sense, was not mature, but because of the connection with Prabhupada and following in his footsteps and his desire, we were able to do that and manifest extreme levels of bhakti, despite so many of our disqualifications. Now, the nice point in this verse, which is about the devotee who has all good qualities. And so often, we look at one another and we say, there's something wrong with this verse here, because it says the devotee has all good qualities, and I'm looking, and no. Only I have the good quality. Nobody else does. Yeah. Something's wrong with this verse. I don't know. I don't understand the verse. And the verse goes on further to say, Hara bhaktasya kuto bahagunan. If you don't have bhakti, you don't have any good qualities. But I know so many people. They're kind, they're clean. You go in the brahmacharya ashram, it's dirty. You go into some house of a non-devotee, it's really clean and organized. Yes? You've seen it? Yes? And some devotee, you say the wrong thing, pow, they blow up in your face. Some non-devotee, you say something wrong, they say, oh, I'm sorry, excuse me. So how is it? How is it? Non-devotees don't have any good qualities. Devotees have all good qualities. So you may be aware that at one time one man complained about a Sankirtan devotee. Was it a woman? She had written Prabhupada complaining that he was... What was the complaint? He was rough around the edges, abrupt, unkind, not sympathetic, something like that. Two brahmacharis that were... We say in America, rough around the edges, not refined, inconsiderate, heavy, you know, which... And Prabhupada wrote back and said, I apologize for their behavior, but they've given their life to God, given their life to Krishna. And that is their glory. Never a mistake. That's their glory, right? So, this verse has puzzled many devotees, but I think one easy way to understand the glory of the devotee is this. We might see so many quote-unquote good qualities in non-devotees, and so many quote-unquote bad qualities in devotees. But who would you rather live with? And what would be the result of living with a non-devotee with all the good qualities, or living with a devotee with all the bad qualities? I think that kind of solves the problem, doesn't it? Yes? If you had your choice, maybe materially it might be nicer externally to live with the nice person who's very courteous and calm. But that will ruin your bhakti. And living with a devotee will certainly give you bhakti. Yes? Now, in some lectures on this verse, Prabhupada says that he says that they have good qualities by material estimation. That's his point. They're good qualities by material estimation. But then he makes the point, the qualities of the devotee are the manifestation of qualities of the soul. 26 qualities of the devotee. So there's a difference. So a non-devotee may be humble, and a devotee may be humble. There's a big difference. Because the devotee's manifestation of humility is a manifestation of spiritual humility, whereas the non-devotee's humility is a manifestation within the modes of nature. Just like an atheist could be quite humble in terms of personality, right? Maybe you're in line and the atheist lets you go in front. He's humble. No, go ahead. No, but there won't be enough to eat. No, that's okay, you eat it. I'll eat less. Oh, he's very humble. Right? But that's a manifestation of humility within the modes of nature. It has nothing to do with his relationship with Krishna. Right? Now, in this verse, there's the word Sushila. And Shu means good, and Shila means behavior. So Sushila means good behavior. Devotee has good behavior. And sometimes Prabhupada translates good behavior as gentle in some verses. You'll see the word gentle. Devotee is gentle, and devotee has good behavior. So I wanted to read something Prabhupada said, which is actually a lecture on this verse. This is a very nice verse. The substance of Krishna conscious movement. Wow, did you know that this verse was the substance of the Krishna conscious movement? Isn't that interesting? So what's the substance of the Krishna? Would you like to know the substance of the Krishna conscious movement? Wow. Who would have guessed this verse is the substance? Here's the substance. That those who are conducting this movement, they must be Sushila, very well behaved. That's the substance. Nobody can find out any fault. That is Sushila. The behavior should be so nice. That is the test, how you have become Krishna conscious. That is the test. Spotless. You study Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's behavior, character. He's ideal. Throughout his whole life, you will not find a spot. You read Chaitanya Charitamrita. Find out some fault. That here is Chaitanya. Sri Krishna Chaitanya is faulty. No, that is Sushila. And that is sadhu. Sadhava. Sadhava means sadhu, saintly person. What is saintly person? So what is Prabhupada saying? He's saying the essence is behavior. That you're outside, and you're inside, and your right side, and your left side, it's all the same. There's no fault. And what does Prabhupada say? Those who are conducting this movement must be Sushila. Right? So then you think, oh, well that's good. Then I don't have to worry about it because I'm not conducting the movement, so I can just be whatever. You know? Ah, Sushila, you know, I'll just be... I mean, I'm just a conditioned soul. What can you expect from me? But actually, everyone's a leader because right now, today, in ISKCON, somewhere, someone has joined, right? So even if you joined yesterday, you are senior to the person who's joined today. So you're a leader. So, sorry, Prabhus. This is for all of us, right? So, those who are conducting this movement, they must be Sushila, very well behaved. Nobody can find fault. So it's very important. I'll read one other thing. If I can find it. Anyway, one of the things that I find in my travels and in the workshops I do that devotees complain about or recognize most is that in the temple they're Krishna conscious. In their relationships, maybe a little less Krishna conscious. In their family lives, even more struggling. In their workplace, more struggling. And sometimes completely disconnected. That in the work world, nothing. No, you wouldn't even know they're devotees sometimes. At least this is what they say. This is what I have observed. So it's a huge challenge to integrate. Okay, I'm a nice devotee in the temple. What about when I'm not in the temple? What if we had a surveillance camera on you? Would you mind if we showed it here? What you've been doing outside the temple for the last year, would it be okay if we took the highlights and broadcasted it on the internet? Would you be all right with that? Our answer has to be yes if we want to be follow it properly. We say, yeah, fine, show it. I'm fine with it. And if we're not fine with it, then we need to live our lives in a way that we can be fine with it. That's what Prabhupada's saying here. And he's saying that's the essence of this movement. No duplicity, charlatan. What you are outside, you are inside. 24 hours a day, there's no disclaimer that any of the qualities, characters, or behavior or actions that Krishna advises us to perform should not be done 24/7. Although sometimes we think like that. So, I think we're supposed to end by 8:45, and I'm famous for going overtime, and I'm just getting warmed up, so I'm going to stop, as I'll get into trouble. So if you have questions or comments, yes. I mean, we can stay later, but we'll have to officially end at 8:45, so I don't destroy my good reputation, whatever of it's left. No, I have to establish my reputation for stopping on time, yes.
Mahaprabhu, I have an over-intelligent question.
Okay.
In connection with Yasyasti Bhaktir, devotees have no good qualities, or devotees have all good qualities, non-devotees. So my practical experience is that it's devotee, non-devotee, anyone. It's not a black and white thing. So can you identify what a devotee is, please?
Identify who the devotees are?
Because it's in my experience, it's not continuum.
Well, there is a conversation. I was with Prabhupada. I had the fortune of being with him in his garden in Los Angeles. And one man said, "How long is it?" He was our lawyer. He said, "How long does it take to surrender to Krishna?" Maybe it's similar to what you're saying in the sense of the gradual process. And Prabhupada said, "At one moment." He said, "You accept Krishna. You accept his instructions." So in that sense, I think, you know, one who has given their life, as Prabhupada keeps saying, they've given their lives to Krishna. In other words, they've accepted. Another thing that Prabhupada said in this Sushila verse, the devotee has all good qualities, no meat eating, no illicit sex, no gambling, no intoxication. He makes that point a lot because he said, the whole world, nobody's following that. So therefore, on that basis, harava bhaktasya kuto mahanguna, where are the good qualities of others? They're meat eaters, illicit sex, gambling, intoxication. There's a lady who went on the streets of New York and walked for 10 hours. And they had a camera on her and they counted how many times she was harassed by men. 100 times in 10 hours. 108 times? Yeah. Like every 5 minutes someone would say something, pinch her, something like that. So, you know, we may think, oh, the devotees, you know, they're not this, they're not that. But Prabhupada's looking at these four things as huge. And in another place, very interesting point Prabhupada made, he was talking about nishtha, steady, and talking about anarthani vritti, and he said, when you take initiation, you make these vows, then you're a nishtha. And we always think it's bhajana kriya. He said, no, it's nishtha, or anarthani vritti, because now you're no longer being pulled by these four sinful activities. So I think that's an important distinction Prabhupada makes when he says the non-devotees have no good qualities. You know, I mean, if we want to be blunt, if you're outside Vedic Varnashram Dharma, you're an animal. So yeah, Prabhupada says that a lot. He talks about a lot of the animals, and the more you look at society, the more you see it's true. So I don't know if that's the answer you wanted, but there are people who do believe in God, who anyone who believes in God is a devotee. But I think these four regular principles are really big because, as many of you know, when Prabhupada was asked, if someone is a real Christian, what would their behavior be? And Prabhupada said, exactly like ours, follow the four regular principles and chant the name of God. And what did he talk to with the priest? He said, why are you eating meat? And in Mexico, why are you allowing bullfights? And all they could do is hang their head. They couldn't say anything. One devotee said, in Ireland, everybody knows how to fight. And you learn how to fight at the pub. And who teaches you how to fight? The priest. Is that true? Yeah, okay. So I rest my case. So we'll officially end class here, and if anyone wants to stay and ask any other questions or make any other comments, I'll be happy to stay, but I don't want to get into trouble. I'm already 3 minutes late. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Go Premanandi. Hari Hari Bol. Jai Prabhupada. So anyone wants to ask another question, that's fine. You can ask it. I mean, publicly, is if you want to stay. Have the microphone. Yeah. Did you get the microphone? Sureshwar has the microphone. Can you bring it back?